Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and parents and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and occasionally interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Lynette Gustafaro is the Executive Director of Teaching Matters, a nonprofit that focuses on urban teachers at elementary and middle school level. Lynette started as a teacher in inner city Baltimore before moving to corporate consulting. She joins 411 Teen this hour to share insights and strategies with parents to help their young teens navigate the transitional period of middle school. Middle school can be awkwardly difficult. It's a period of transition. So knowing what your child may encounter or experience during those years can help prepare and prevent problems. Lynette, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you, Dr. Hollyfield. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, appreciate it. The middle school years are characterized as being one of the most tumultuous times of development. Why?
That's a great question. I think there's so much going on in terms of transition with respect to school, and you can think about it from sort of first is the change and the way that, you know, and the change in kids' experience with their teachers. You know, mm-hmm. they go from elementary school often yeah. where they have one teacher, and then they go to middle school where suddenly they are juggling multiple teachers, multiple classes, different homework assignments. So that's like the one, you know, sort of first transition just in their schooling. Mm-hmm. But then there's another transition that's going on that's totally normal and developmentally appropriate, but it's still really hard. And that is that, you know, middle school children in fifth and sixth grade are in some ways more similar to elementary kids. They still tend to see role models, their authority figures as role models that they are sort of trying to please to some degree, just like younger children are. Mm-hmm. But as they move into seventh and eighth grade, there's a completely developmentally appropriate process that kids are going through where they should be developing their independence. But that experience where kids are going from thinking that adults have all the answers to really what they should do is start to be looking towards, they start to realize, wait, adults don't have all the answers. And actually, you know, they start to crave their own independence. While that's appropriate, it also is actually kind of hard for kids because mm-hmm. The way that they experience it is that suddenly they kind of look at the adults and their parents and their teachers and they say, well, wait a minute, these guys, actually, I thought that they were the go-tos for everything, and now I'm questioning all of that. So kids experience that as actually kind of potentially lonely and isolating. And that's when you start to see kids questioning and acting out. Those are two really important transitions. It's one is developmental for the child, and the other is that the whole structure of school changes at the same time.
In addition to that, I would think that this may also be a stressful period for the parents, as their role may change drastically or fluctuate. You know, sparks may fly between the teens and their parents as they establish or attempt to establish their own identity and attempt to separate from family.
Absolutely. I think it is such a challenge for every parent, this period where children are starting to, again, do what they're supposed to do, frankly. It's funny. I always say sometimes parents that are just starting the process of dealing with kids who are transitioning independence, I say, do you remember when your child was two and they sort of discovered gravity and they started to take their cup off the high chair and throw it down to the ground? That's something that little kids do. And it seems like a bad behavior. They're taking things and throwing them to the ground. And, you know, you'll find sometimes parents might react to that to correct the child because, you know, they're they're doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But what they, if you take a different lens on it and you say, wait a minute, actually, this is exactly right. A child's brain is developed so they understand that this cup, if I let go of it, it's going to fall over. And
right.
So I can't actually get angry at it, even though it's bad, even though it's making a mess, even though there's water all over the floor. This is what they're supposed to do. I have to manage my reaction to it,
mm-hmm.
understanding that this is what they're supposed to do. So we just have to. We have to kind of. I think it's easier said than done, obviously. But when you frame it that this is actually healthy, that this is a step to independence, sometimes it helps you manage your own emotions, because, like as you pointed out, you know, for a parent. It's kind of traumatic when your child starts mm-hmm. moving to independence. That's just that's traumatic for you.
Right.
Nobody wants that.
It is. And as we talk about parents and thinking about them and their role in this whole transition, are there other major issues that parents are confronted with during this time? I mean, from their own perspective and in the roles that they play that may be helpful as they negotiate this difficult period.
Well, yeah, I think, I mean, first of all, every child is different,
mm-hmm.
and every kid has, you know, different levels of different relationship with school. They have different, you know, you really have to start by knowing your child. And you have to remember, while the child seems to be changing, and sometimes it even may even seem like a stranger, you do know some things about your child. Do you know, does your child need, you know, a lot of support to be organized?
Mm-hmm.
Does your child, you know, get anxious over things? Is your child really relaxed? And or does your child tend to, you know, fall, you know, kind of remember things or not
mm-hmm.
remember? Does your child, how much support does your child really need? And then what you want to think about is in fifth and sixth grade, I think, is a little bit different than seventh and eighth grade. So in fifth grade, you really want to help your child make this transition from having one teacher to having, you know, multiple teachers. And the thing that parents sometimes, you know, don't really realize is when I have when you have one teacher, you know, the teacher's potentially, you know, 30
mm-hmm.
kids in the class. When you move to a middle school, that teacher now has, you know, could have 150 kids
exactly.
over the course of a day. And so that teacher has a very different relationship with your child than the teachers they've had in the past. They probably know them less.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have as much time with them. And so one important thing that a parent needs to do is if you want to support your child, very active, make a point to get to know your teachers. Make a point to connect with those teachers. And sometimes the parents will say, you know, I don't want to do that because, you know that this teacher's got so many people to deal with. But as a former teacher,
mm-hmm.
I remember the parents that made themselves known to me. They made it known that they knew their child. They also made it known that they were on my side
mm-hmm.
as a teacher, that they were going to support me, you know, in helping their child. And I have to tell you that's for a lot of teachers, that sticks in their head. You know, so depending on where your child is, you know, we have some challenges where parents kind of, they call it, you know, we call it helicopter parenting, where they're trying to do everything for their
right.
child. And we have some parents, you know, who, and then there's the other side of it where you're afraid, well, am I doing enough because the child needs support? And so, like, I think one big question for parents is, like, what's the balance?
Mm-hmm.
How involved do I get?
But,
and the simple.
Not to interrupt you, because I wanted to have you address this before you move to something else, is that middle school is often a time when parents tend to become less involved in their child's study. I mean, I've seen that. And so I think it's important that you emphasize that they need to establish and maintain contact with teachers so that their child can be successful. Would you agree with that perspective?
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely. And there's sort of, and I think there's like two important ways to support your child. So if you have a child who you find has, you know, is relatively successful at sort of managing their own, you know, their own business. Some
mm-hmm.
children you've developed some of those skills when they're younger, and I can tell you my own child fights every time I get involved in anything. You know, I want to know what the homework is. Like, he really likes to manage his own things. That doesn't mean, though, that I walk away from it. It does mean that I have to really check in with my child and kind of communicate with him about how he's doing, what he's doing. You know, make sure that he knows that I am paying attention, and set up some sort of routine with him where I'm checking in. But if I was to go into his, you know, a lot of the schools now, you can go in, you can actually find out what the homework is.
Right.
They post
yes.
things online. Mm-hmm. You know, I've made a choice. I can do that. I've actually made a choice with my child to not do that, to sort of talk to him about that and mm-hmm. let him manage that, because he's got that. But if I had a different child, a child that needed more support with that, then I would more actively engage in that. You know, I would say, and even though the child is going to resist you at every moment, because that's the age where they're supposed to be craving and wanting right. independence. You still have to balance what they want and also what you may know they need. And you can have three kids, you know, you can have different kids in the same family, and it's okay to take a different approach with each depending on what their needs are.
Indeed. You know, also, this is a time where teens are confronted with physiological changes, emotional stressors, mm-hmm. and we kind of touched on identity issues, academic demands. What impact does just this whole change, all of these changes collectively, what impact may that have on their daily functioning?
Like I said, I think that as kids are going through these identity, you know, identity formation and mm-hmm. becoming more independent are really tied together. So when kids are starting to say, hey, I used to think adults had all the answers, and now I don't anymore, I'm really starting to question that. That's when they're actually developing their own identity, because they're starting to turn to themselves. Again, that's all healthy, normal process, but it is kind of scary. It can be scary for kids. It can be sad. They can experience it as loneliness. Mm-hmm. And they're also going to push you away. And they're going to they're also sort of pushing their teachers away. Mm-hmm. So that emotional piece very much plays in to that. You know, a couple of things that I think is important for parents to keep in mind in this is to really connect with your school. And so there's a couple of things parents I think should know about schools. So good schools that are doing right by kids, and you know, many are, but there are some that may not be. So it's important to know. They usually, and this is some of the things that we support schools in doing, is they tend to set up, you know, I just talked about middle school is a time when kids have, you know, can have many different teachers. What I've seen really strong schools doing is really setting up teams of teachers. So, for example, the sixth grade team meets, the seventh grade team mm-hmm. meets, and that's really important, because just like the mm-hmm. elementary teacher is able to keep, you know, have the full picture of your child, in a school that's doing right, they're looking at kids that might be struggling as a team.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We are going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and I've been talking with Lynette Gustafaro. She is the executive director of Teaching Matters. She draws on her experiences as being an inner-city teacher and developing effective strategies for working with middle school students for over two decades. Lynette, I had to interrupt you. My apologies, but you were just talking about the school experiences and working with teams. Would you continue?
Sure. So the way that Teaching Matters works in partnership with schools is to develop to develop teachers working as teams. And in those teams, there's some really important things that happen. So for one, schools are often looking looking at kids, and they're identifying kids that might need sort of more help or additional mm-hmm. help. And I guess the thing that, from a parent's perspective, I think is worth knowing, it's worth knowing and talking to somebody in the administration to understand, how does this school let me know if there's a challenge? Like, what is the actual process? Or, you know, because most schools have one. So what will happen is the kids who potentially are struggling academically, because how do I know if my kid really, really needs me to really intervene, or is my kid just doing normal teenage stuff? You know, and what's the difference, and how do I know? Well, it's really important important to connect with the teachers and compare notes and as you can. And so in schools, there's often a group of kids that might be identified as really having additional struggles and concerns. And let mm-hmm. me tell you, those parents tend to know because the school is in contact with them. But what if that's not happening and you have some concerns? And, you know, but your kids are not necessarily showing up on the radar of the school because they're not, you know, they don't have, they're from the school's perspective, you know, maybe they're okay. But that doesn't mean that the parent needs to not pay close attention. So a couple of things that parents should know. There's been a lot of research done on when should you really be worried about a kid's, you know, potential to go to college or success in college or you know, what, there are signs in middle school that smart schools are paying close attention to. We call mm-hmm. them early warning signs. So it turns out, for example, that, you know, kids' attendance matters a whole heck of a lot. And if kids are not, you know, if kids are sort of cutting school, that is a very big warning flag that child actually may not end up graduating or going to college. That might not be a surprise to parents, but it's something that schools have to actually closely mm-hmm. monitor. And so if a school's calling you about, you know, your child's attendance in school, that's a really serious issue, because what the school knows is that means that child is probably in danger of not even graduating high school. That's one. Mm-hmm. Another thing that is worth knowing is, like, the grades, for example. You know, kids that are, if a kid in 7th or 8th grade is starting to, it gets, for example, a C, that's actually another flag that in middle school that tells schools that there's a chance now that this child may have a significant problem graduating and going to college. And not everyone would assume a C. A C mm-hmm. is obviously not a great grade, but you wouldn't necessarily assume it's as big a flag as that. So if you have those flags, your child is cutting at school, like not going to school a few times. I'm talking just a couple times. Mm-hmm. Or a child gets a C. This is a time where you have to get to that school, and you have to have a meeting with teachers, and you really want that school to let's put together a little bit of a plan to make sure that this is that we're taking care of this. And the approach from a parent side is always, how can I help you, teachers, to do this? How can I be a support? What can I do? And if you approach the school from that direction, a lot of times I think teachers are incredibly relieved by that.
And I think also something that one may want to investigate are friendships, because establishing and maintaining friendships can be trying, to say at the least, at middle school. You know, middle school teens can be very cruel and mean to each other and uttering some unforgivable things about each other. But this also happens in middle school. And if your teen does not have any friends,
oh, absolutely.
That's a huge.
So the social emotional warning signs. Mm-hmm. I was talking about academic ones, but
right?
Yeah,
right.
There's lots of social. So social emotional, and this is why I think it's so important for the parent to kind of compare notes mm-hmm. with the school, because when you get together, that's when you might have one part of the puzzle. Like, you might realize the child is not making friends. The teacher may not. The teacher realizes that, you know, so-and-so got a C or got this grade,
right.
Didn't turn in
exactly.
these homework assignments. Comparing notes and understanding, well, what's causing this? Where is, you know, that's why it's so important, is that you get together and that you approach it from the perspective of really supporting each other in this work.
Do you find that gender plays a role in adjusting to middle school? I mean, is it any more difficult for males than females?
Well, I mean, we have seen some research, you know, especially in certain, you know, in especially in English language arts, you know, that mm-hmm. boys tend to see more drops in middle school than girls do with respect to grades. You know, there are reasons for that. You know, so there's a lot of thought that schools are not really constructed well for boys, for the way that boys kind of, not to stereotype broadly, girls and boys can be similar and different, but you know, schools require a lot of sit and get often,
right.
And that can be, middle school is when I think sometimes we see even more challenges with boys. Not that girls don't have their own, I think girls can have lots of issues with respect to peer groups and things like
that
can be. They both have their challenges.
Okay. As we look at challenges, I mean, I think another indicator that parents may pick up on is that the sibling relationships may change. The older teen may no longer have time for the younger sibs. And do you think that's something significant that they need to be aware of, or how they interact with them?
Well, you know, it's always a hard call because, you know, it's funny, like the sibling relationship is such a love-hate relationship.
Yes,
and
it is.
That hate just looks so scary that you're just like, these children are never, ever going to be friends. And I, in my experience, I don't know about yours, I feel like some of the most tormented younger relationships are some of the best friends as adults.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's developmentally appropriate. Kids are defining their own identities. They're discovering, you know, middle school teens are incredibly influenced by their friends. That's where they want to start to spend their time.
Right.
They don't want to hang out with their siblings. They don't want to hang out with their parents. But again, they're establishing this independence, and that's normal. The key is they give them some, but don't check out. They're trying to check out from you, but you don't check out from them, and you're staying on them, and you're connecting with them. And I think the key is managing the frustration and just telling yourself, you know what? Most of this is normal, and I just got to get through this.
Right. And I think you said that word a couple of times, but I think it's important that parents, you know, have a real feel for this, that most of this is normal. It's normal. They are at a point where they're in the transition. They're developing autonomy. Autonomy means, you know, separating from parents and from home. So you may see some of this. And the real key, I think, also is, how severe is it? Sure, you're going to see some sibling rivalry, but is it has it changed? Has it been a major change just all of a sudden? You know, what is happening? There might be an indicator as to if there are some serious problems. There's lots of times people and children will take out their inadequacies, their anxieties, and they may take it out on those who are closest to them.
Absolutely.
Yes.
No, absolutely. Again, I can't stress more the importance of connecting, you know, with if you can find one teacher that you can communicate with, check in with the school. If you're really concerned and if you're seeing those warning signs, don't confine yourself to those times where the school invites you in. You have your parent-teacher conference. You know, there's ways in which the school does reach out and you know, has those set times where you can engage with them. But advocate for your kid, but in a positive way that is pro-teacher, and you will get more attention for your child. That's my belief, you know, in the system. And if your kid needs it, you need to do it. If your kid seems to be fine, having normal, you know, first of all, one of the things we say is middle school is a time where kids are sort of it's okay for them to make mistakes. You know, we want them to learn how to be independent. And whenever you learn something, you're going to make mistakes. And that's important to know, too. So this idea that, you know, a child might, you know, be late to school a bunch of times, or maybe they've cut a class, or maybe they've gotten into some sort of, you know, they've done something inappropriate. They cheated on a test. So just remembering that this is the time where they're going to make those mistakes. There needs to be repercussions for it, but it's normal for them to be testing boundaries, figuring out who they are, and reacting to it as though this is normal. I just think when the mindset is, you know, the sky isn't falling because this is just something I got to go through with my child.
Right.
It's different than, you know, blaming the child and really thinking that the child is wrong or bad or doing the wrong thing. It can really feel like it. I mean, let's be honest. It can feel really bad. But keeping in mind, this is normal behavior. We will get through this, and they will come out of it. And I think that's just hard sometimes when you're a parent, especially when they first start going through that change.
Well, this is a period I would characterize as vulnerability. Would you agree with that? I mean, they're vulnerable in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, Absolutely, because think about how scary it is going from thinking that, you know, this is you becoming an adult. And again, it's so important. And when children are little, they really do have the sense that adults know everything and that they've got the answers. Mm-hmm. They may not act like it, they may rebel, mm-hmm. but deep down in their heart, they think the adults in their world have all the answers. The idea of suddenly realizing that, wait a minute, these kids actually don't have all the answers. They actually get angry. I mean, they actually get mad about this. Yes. And that's, again, it's hard to believe, but like, that's just normal, right? That's what they're supposed to do. Because what the brain is trying to learn to do is start to rely on self rather than others, because it's preparing them for adulthood. But that is, for them, that feels lonely. It feels sad. And mm-hmm. they're kind of mourning the loss mm-hmm. of having, you know, somebody who, you know, this recognition that they're a little bit alone in the world is something that they have to get through.
Yeah, exactly. And again, we've said this works two ways, because that parent is used to having someone looking up to them, coming to them for their every need. You know, what should I do? Consulting them before they make decisions. Now you may find that your teen may be making the decision and they don't seek your advice. You know?
And let yourself. I think you have to let yourself mourn that mm-hmm. because you did lose something, and you have to let yourself be a little sad about that. Just like the kids are mourning a little bit the loss that you have all the answers, you have to mourn too. Hey, I'm really sad that this has changed, because mm-hmm. I think this is it's just something you have to sort of feel and try not to take it out on each other, but experience it and recognize that that's what's going on, and that's okay. That is totally normal. Now, one thing I do recommend is, you know what 7th grade teachers and 8th grade teachers sort of know better than parents? They know 7th graders and 8th graders. They have been mm-hmm. dealing with them for years. They've exposed to all sorts and kinds. So one thing I do say is, trust sometimes the 7th grade teachers and the 8th grade teachers, because what seems shocking and a huge change to you, that's just their normal. Mm-hmm. You know, if they've been, this is how they, you know, this is their experience with kids every day. And they actually have a lot of usually strategies for coping with it. So, you know, listen to your 7th and 8th grade, you know, your middle school teachers when they talk to you about your kids, and because they actually have a lot of experience there.
Well, I had one parent that wanted me to bring up and talk about losses that occur during this time, which may be extremely difficult, extremely traumatic during this transitional time. And I think of loss meaning, you know, death or divorce, whichever. But it is a difficult period. And I know really we're looking at academics, but I didn't know if you wanted to comment some on, you know, experiencing loss during this transitional, vulnerable period in the first place.
Oh, I think that is so challenging, because, again, kids are already going through a certain kind of loss, mm-hmm. and then to have that on top of it can just really magnify. Again, one thing as I said, Teaching Matters partners with schools to really help schools and teams of teachers work with kids more effectively. And we do that by making sure that they sort of identify and flag kids that really need additional support. And so, again, if that happens, if your child goes through that kind of loss, it is very important to make that known to the school. Mm-hmm. Make that really known to the teachers. Keep them up to date. They may seem busy. They may not seem to pay attention. Send them a little email and just say, this is how he's doing. You want to keep the teachers fully engaged in that. And so don't, you know, you don't want to go overboard emailing every day. But it's okay to really, you know, make yourself known. A teacher's got a limited attention, and if your child needs it, advocate for your child. And also teach your child to advocate for themselves, because that's the other big piece. And by the way, sometimes kids like that better. If you're teaching them, you know, that's mm-hmm. that's a big skill in 7th and 8th grade. You know, if you're struggling in mathematics, I can go in and talk to the teacher, but I can also talk to you about how you are going to ask for additional help. And then we're going to talk about how that went.
Okay.
That's a great strategy to work with kids, is helping them advocate for themselves.
Well, and that indeed is very important. And as we talk about losses, I wanted to say a couple other things on that, is that It doesn't even have to always be the loss, meaning a death. It can be the loss of a friendship, because you find that in middle school, friends change, and the dynamics of friendships may change to a point where that parents feel that the friends have become more influential, or that friends are no longer there, and we need to realize that, because I from my perspective, I know that all of this is very important, but I think you can tell so much about what's happening with a teen by looking at their friends or lack of them or their relationship with their friends. You know, sometimes they may have perceived a betrayal, and this is always an issue. You know, in friendship in middle school, loyalty is so very important.
Oh, very important.
Okay.
Absolutely. And then, no, children, and we all know in middle school, children's friends become the most important people in the world, and they and plenty of research shows, and I don't think you need research. Every parent sort of sees this. That friends have more influence at that point sometimes than you do. Well, you know, the tried and true. I mean, a lot. So parents are working, so sometimes this doesn't. You know, it's harder for some families than others, but. You know, one tried and true strategy is to create a situation where those kids want to hang out at your house.
Yes.
You know, whether it's you giving them a space where they can be alone, and you might pop your head in here and there, where you've got great food. But, you know, I think that some of the parents that really figure this out, if they figure out a way to get to know their kids' friends, engage with their kids' friends, be the parent that the other friends actually like. Maybe your child is thinking you're the worst. But make sure the friends don't. You know, figure out how to get into their hearts.
That is very important. I agree with you wholeheartedly. You know, and I think in addition to that, it's important to emphasize that one can, for parents particularly, that one can grow separately, yet they doesn't mean that they're growing apart. I mean, for example, and I'm talking about disagreements are normal, although they may appear earth-shattering, they aren't. Parents need to be able to let that go. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I'm talking with Lynette Gustafaro. She's talking about middle school teens. We're going to take a brief break.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. Again, I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I'm talking with Lynette Gustafaro. And Lynette, so often we hear the term college readiness.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? I mean, what should parents or teachers look for to determine if your child is ready for college at the middle school? Of course, the other thing I want to emphasize, and I think that we often may overlook this, is that not everyone has to go to college to be successful. But those who, you know, are interested in college, the college track, what should we look for? What should parents look for if they're not on track? Now, I know we talked about attendance and grades, but I was just wondering, are there any other indicators, any other variables that we should be aware of?
Well, so there's a lot of research done on by schools on how they can figure it out, because it's not easy to, you know, when a child is in sixth and seventh grade and eighth grade, to really know that. So the research, the research has shown that you can identify kids are sort of on or off track based on certain behaviors, like are they trying to get out of school, cut school, you know, not go to school, and also if they are struggling. One particular one, looking at math, and I don't know how many of your parents know this, but if your child is not taking algebra by ninth grade, there's very little chance that they're going to college. And so you really want to make sure that your child is set up with what they need and mm-hmm. the supports they need to be taking algebra by ninth grade. So that's the academics. And there's a lot of research on that. So paying attention closely to your child's math grades and do they need extra support. Lots of kids mm-hmm. need a lot of extra support in doing their math and doing their work. So how do you handle that? You know, a lot of parents are working. I work too. I understand the difficulty. You do need to set up with your kids some real specific, I think, routines and structures about checking in strategically at certain, if it's once a week, if it's every other week. There's got to be a way where you really have a sense of where this child is. If a child is starting to show that their grades are slipping, and by slipping I mean, you know, B minus and moving mm-hmm. to like a C, okay. you have to take that seriously. A C is a warning sign that a child is off track for college. Now, again, as you said, not everybody has to go to college. We also want to be in middle school helping kids figure out what they're interested in, what mm-hmm. are they passionate about, you know, what are the things that engage them, and getting them involved in something that makes them, A, want to go to school and do well in school so that they can pursue whatever that is. And so helping kids, I think it's tough right now because, you know, with the social media and all the negativity that's going on right now, I think kids are really feeling that mm-hmm. in a way that, and I think we see it in schools. I talk to teachers all the time that say there's anxiety in, we all feel it, I think, but I think that our kids feel it too because, you know, our country right now seems to be a little, I don't know. All I can say is that the kids are feeling it, right. and teachers are reporting it in a way that they hadn't been before. And so, you know, again, checking in with your kids and having those conversations, even though they are going to push you away, don't let that happen. Figure out a way to figure out what you can talk to your child about. It could be not to do with school. It could be not to do with, but find topics that your kids will engage in. Use those as a gateway. And there's got to be some sort of no nonsense. Like, this is a structure that we do. We check, you know, every week or every 2 weeks. I know what you have to do, and I'm making sure it's done. Again, that doesn't mean mm-hmm. that could be a process where the child is letting you know. It doesn't mean that you have to be chasing them, but right. there's a process of checking in. How did the test go? You know, what do you got going on this week? How's it going? You know, how did that test? Asking kids questions about that, they're not going to like it. They're going to push back on it, but you just got to do it.
What other academic concerns? I'm thinking of coursework now. Should parents be aware of? I mean, for example, you talked about algebra. Why is algebra so critical? And are there other courses
need? Like that?
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Well, so if a child hasn't taken algebra by ninth grade, they basically do not have access. They're not going to have access to higher level math, which means that they won't have the classes that they need to graduate. And if you and all the research shows, and a lot of time and energy is spent on making sure the kids are ready for algebra. Now, here's the trick: you know, kids don't get ready for algebra in ninth grade. This has to start early, mm-hmm. and they have to be on track in math when they're younger in order to be able to get to algebra by ninth grade. And the answer to this is got to be, if you have a child struggling in mathematics, is you got to give them the extra supports that they need. If it's finding somebody that can help them. There are programs outside of school. I know some of those cost money, but algebra is a big one, big, big one. Mm-hmm. There are not as many other big red flags like algebra in terms of coursework that is one that we spend a lot of time on. The other one that we look at again is is a child getting a C? And it's so funny. You know how we do all this testing.
right.
But the reality is the tests are not, the big testing, those state tests, those are not as predictive of your kids' chances for college than their grades are. Those grades they get from their teachers matter because the teachers are taking a lot of information in. You can have a child that tests poorly, but the teacher sees that they're doing the homework, that they're putting the work in. So if you have a child that's testing poorly, but that they're getting reasonably, you know, they're getting good grades from their teacher, that's a good sign. I mean,
I'm so glad to hear you say that. I mean, because so often we are hung up on the test and the test score. You know, you have to take this to be promoted to the next tier, or take this to be promoted to the next grade. So for you to say that, it's very important.
Yeah. And there's plenty of research to back that up. Again, you can have a teacher that grades easy, so you got to pay close attention
right.
when the child's doing across their subject.
Of course. But again, you need to understand that teacher has been with that child and interacts with that child, and also may have a better insight into, you know, how that child is functioning. Folks, they could even have test anxiety. A lot of kids have test anxiety.
Absolutely.
Now, you know, because we emphasize taking tests so much, okay? And I think that parents may need to resist that whole temptation to pressure kids to a point that they can't enjoy school, they can't enjoy middle school, and if their middle school experience is something that's negative, or if they're concerned about, excessively concerned, I would say, about success or failure, that opens up another whole can of worms. Would you agree?
Absolutely. A lot of anxiety for kids. But, you know, again, what parents can do is set up routines, just like when you do for little children. Certain routines and structures. It's harder in 7th and 8th grade, but that's why you want to get a head start on this. You know, like if the structure is come home, watch TV all afternoon, and it's up to the kids to figure out, like, getting their homework done, and there's a lot of yelling, did you get it? No. Like, we're putting a structure in this house that this is happening at this time. Unless your child is demonstrating that they can get this done on their own, then you have to put supports in place. Uh-huh. You know, the TV's off at a certain time, and this is homework. This is time to get the work done. You know, you are the parent.
Right.
Don't be afraid to be the parent.
But of course, the flip side is don't take it to the extreme like the helicopter parent.
Absolutely.
Because my next question was going to ask you, how do we rein in these helicopter moms and dads, you know, that monitor everything and may do everything and remind kids you have your test tomorrow and you have this and blah, blah. How do we, you know, rein them in?
Yeah, so on the other extreme, if
right.
that's where you are.
Because there are a lot of those these days.
You notice I said check in once a week. I didn't
right.
say check in
every day.
Now, again, you can have children who need extra real,
right.
but those are kids that may have learning differences and maybe they are struggling with, or maybe they have, you know, attention deficit, or they're struggling with other issues.
Right.
If your child doesn't have those issues, you should not be, you know, constantly on the online portal figuring out what homework they have and don't
right.
have. Again, I think the key for parents is, are you letting your child make any mistakes? You know, like are you of the view that you have to solve every problem for them? You've got to let your kids fail. You know, and that's very hard. Like,
it is.
I mean, it's easier said than done. But you have to give. If your child comes home with a very poor grade on a test, you know, what is your response to that? Do you know, is your response to, you know, kind of go after that, or is your response to ask them how are they feeling about it? What did they think of it? What did they do to prepare for that? Can they explain it? Like, what could they do different next time? And maybe you don't do it the day the test comes home. Maybe you say, you know what, I see you're upset. Let's talk about that tomorrow. And if the child gets a bad grade and doesn't seem bothered at all, seems perfectly okay
that's
with that,
concern.
Well, that's a whole different
That's true. And I think you touched on it earlier in this segment. You were talking about a balance. And here what we're talking about is for that parent to kind of strike a balance between that helicopter parent, to strike a balance to allow their child to take some responsibility and some ownership, okay, of their coursework, of their behavior, of whatever it may be, what they have to do to be successful, so you want to balance between monitoring and helicoptering and allowing the team to take some ownership.
And I do think the trick to that, because I think it's really hard to know, you know, it's funny, you have helicopter parents who are doing too much and they don't know how to step back. And you have sometimes parents that are sort of are not intervening enough because they sometimes, whether they know to or maybe they feel, you know, the kids have really pushed them away at that point. You know, I think the key for helicopter parents is you do need to let your child make some mistakes,
right.
not just letting them take
yes.
ownership.
Yeah.
Monitor your response to their mistakes And remember, mistakes are how you learn. Mm-hmm. So the important part of a mistake is how you process with that child. What did you learn from? Like, what did you learn from that? You know, we're going to make mistakes. What are you learning from those mistakes? And that's an okay conversation to have. The conversation doesn't have to be, look, you made 8 mistakes. No. Okay,
no.
Let's talk about what happened.
Exactly.
Now tell me what you learned. You tell me, what do you think you'll do differently next time? That's a different conversation than next time you've got to do X, Y, and Z. And I expect,
right.
You know. Now, again, you can have, if that child does not care.
Well, that's another
that's
problem.
Different
that's a different problem, okay? And as we talk about this, I know you need to define success. And parents need to define success. Would you agree that they need to define hopefully it's reality-based, okay? But they do need to discuss how they define success and what they expect.
Yeah, I think conversation, like, you know, schools are defining success for your kids, mm-hmm. no question. You know, but I do think that we have to work, we really have to sort of help kids check in and figure out, you know, what is it that they enjoy? Try things out. You know, what if you, and frankly, I mean, I can say this, but if I ask my own kid, what does he enjoy? I like video games, and if he could, mm-hmm. he'd play them all day. So, you know, and I think that's every parent's, you know, it's
right.
what is your passion? The iPad. No.
Yeah.
You know, like, so yes, maybe the iPad, but how do we help kids explore? Maybe it's not taking away the iPad, but maybe it's what we're creating on the iPad. But how do we help kids actively explore things that they really are engaged with? Not mm-hmm. every kid, they talk about helping kids find their passions. Frankly, not every kid is super passionate about things. But you do have to help kids explore and find interests.
Right.
You know, the research shows if kids, you know, have found something that really engages them, that just helps with everything else. Whether they like a sport, whether they like to create art, whether they like to create music, you know, maybe they want to get a job, you know.
Right.
But like, find ways to figure out. We don't want our kids who were checked out, you know, and unhappy. Which, remember,
right.
them being unhappy at this age and
it's,
lonely and feeling angry is
normal.
Normal.
Right. Well, how can parents help their teens learn things like time management and organizational skills? Because time management and organizational skills are critical for success.
You know, I think it's really challenging if you yourself also
mm-hmm.
struggle with time management and organizational skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, so like if you're someone who's got great time management and organizational skills and you're sort of trying to pass some of these strategies down to your child, but what if you yourself have those challenges? Well, one thing to keep in mind is you and your child might actually be very similar. So what have you been able to do in overtime that's actually worked for you?
Right.
And are there ways to help? Not saying do it because I did it, because that's the last thing they want to know. But, you know, it's funny because I always say, I see all the time where parents who are struggling with time management and organizational skills can't help their children. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, you've gotten through life. You're mm-hmm. doing relatively okay.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the coping skills that you've created?
Right.
Talk about them with your kids. Don't be afraid to say, you know, I actually really struggle to get places on time.
Mm-hmm.
I struggle to keep my thing organized. This is what I've learned to do. But start by saying, let them know that you actually have that struggle. It doesn't make you a bad person. It means that you have to organize. You have to do this differently. Maybe there's
right.
ways that other kids do it. It's not going to work for you. But be transparent with your kids about what, you know, with respect to that, with that issue. Again, what kids need are sort of routines and structures
mm-hmm.
That can help them go through. And I think some of that is about, like, being really clear, like, on maybe Mondays we do a check-in, Fridays we do a check-in,
mm-hmm.
you know, and again, by 7th and 8th grade, that can get really difficult. But so use that 4th, 5th, and 6th grade to really teach it so that they get it. You want them to master it when they're younger, so that by the time they, you know, really are independent, they've got it.
Right.
You know, and so you got a window where you can really do this. And at some point, they just, you know, it gets a lot harder.
Well, in this last minute and a half, I think I'd like to have you address a little bit of bullying and antisocial behaviors, because they tend to peak in middle school. And how can parents arm their teens and support them when dealing and coping with such negative behavior?
Well, I mean, this is an obvious one, but if you're talking to your child and you're able to, that's just, it's just being, having those conversations with your child where you can really get in touch and understand. Because I think what's really scary is when kids are being bullied at school and parents really aren't even aware of it.
That's it.
And so that's one whole issue. And I think that's where you can really see. But if a child is talking to you about the problem and sharing that with you, and then help, you know, one is problem solving with them. Some of this, you know, so there's two challenges. We use the word bullying now. One thing that does make me sad is that schools are really focused on, quote, anti-bullying. Mm. And I really think what schools need to focus on is, like, developing the social-emotional skills, you know, in a positive way. So, like, what are the skills that you need, the emotional intelligence skills that kids need? Focusing it on what we have to build in children, it's not sort of like, oh, we should just not have bullying. No, we have to learn how to talk to each other, how to treat each other, how to resolve conflicts.
We've got 30 seconds left. I just wanted to share that with you.
Yeah, so that's just my last thing. It's helping kids to learn how to speak respectfully and talk with each other, and making sure that if your child is struggling in that area, that you are talking to the school.
Okay. Well, Lynette, thank you so much for sharing your information, your insights, and your effective strategies for working with middle school students. To my listening audience, thanks for your time and your ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Teen archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.